Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Debrief. I'm your host, Luis, and this week is a particularly exciting one for us here at Incident.io. Why? Well, we launched 4 AI-powered features: Assistant, Suggested Summaries, Suggested Follow-ups, and Related Incidents. All of these features are a long time coming. Our team has been working on them for weeks now, and we're super, super excited to get them into the hands of our customers. But naturally, my first question was, why? Why now? And how exactly did all of these projects go? This is a lot of work, a lot of hard work in a new space. So I can imagine it was quite challenging. So to help answer some of these questions, I sat down with Charlie Revitt, a product engineer who played a big role in the Assistant project, and Ed Dean, who is a product analyst here at Incident.io. In this conversation, you'll hear us chat about, again, why and why now? What was it like working with design partners? What did each of them learn throughout these projects? And what people can expect to get out of all of these features? I think you're going to find this conversation really insightful, and hopefully we'll get you really, really excited about this slate of features and what's ahead for us on the AI horizon here at Incident.io. So here it is. Here's my conversation with Ed and Charlie. All right, let's start off nice and simple. Can you both introduce yourselves and what you do here at Incident.io? Charlie, yep. Let's start with you.
Sounds good. I'm Charlie. I'm a product engineer in the post-incident team. I joined just over a year ago. And contextually to this podcast, I led the Assistant project.
And I'm Ed. I've been with Incident for nearly 2 years. I joined as the first person in a newly formed data team. But recently I've been focused on working on our products in data, insights, and AI.
Obviously, we're here to talk about our new set of AI features. So the AI features that we are releasing this week, or have released this week by the time you're listening to this podcast episode, are Assistant, Summary Suggestions, Follow-ups, and Related Incidents. So can you both explain what each of these features are about? Maybe Charlie, you can explain 2 of them, and Ed, you can explain the other 2.
So Related Incidents is a kind of contextual tool that helps responders within incidents find other incidents that relate to theirs. So this is especially important if you're in quite a large, complex organization. You're not going to be touching all of the incidents that happen at your company. And most of the time, incidents aren't unique. There will be similarities between your current incident and what happened in the past. But finding that is really difficult if you weren't a part of it or it was a part of a different team. And this is kind of where this feature steps in. It's a really light touch feature that within the Slack channel itself, it will nudge you to say, hey, I found a few related incidents. Why don't you go and have a look? So this has been something that customers have asked for around linking 2 incidents together. We're just doing this in a slightly more intelligent way. And the second feature is Assistant. This is kind of a ChatGPT style interface for users to do any form of analysis. So we already have kind of comprehensive set of insights charts within the product, but our customers love these so much so that they're constantly asking for additions and especially nuanced charts to expand on these. We can't build everything, especially if it's very detailed and nuanced to how that organization runs. So we've really wanted to build an analysis tool that promotes autonomy so the user can kind of explore themselves and go on their own journey to find insights. So that's kind of where we landed with this chat interface, where you can start from any point and continue your conversation, build out charts and tables. So instead of exporting that data into a CSV, you can do it within the product.
And the other 2 features are suggested summaries and suggested follow-ups. So a little bit like related incidents, these are things you'll mostly interact with in Slack to help you respond during incidents. So an incident summary is a core part of our product. It's essentially just, it does what it says it does. It's a description of everything that's happening in the incident. It's usually the first thing someone will look at when they come into a new incident channel to get up to speed on everything that's going on. The challenge with summaries is they're really time consuming for responders to keep up to date. And if they're not up to date, they might be missing some relevant information. They're also hard to keep formatted consistently, which means they're hard to scan through if there's lots of incidents going on at once. And it's also hard for someone to write an update, a summary, sorry, that can be easily understood by all audiences. So suggested summaries really help solve some of those issues. So what we do when someone writes an incident update, we use that contextual information as well as the kind of conversation that's happened in the incident so far to generate a summary for you. And we've been honestly really impressed by the reception already to suggested summaries. So we're helping people save lots of time. So responders are writing 40% fewer summaries overall. So across our app, that's literally hundreds of hours, and these are crucial hours during response. But despite the fact responders are writing them less, we actually have more summaries overall, 40% more summaries overall, which means the summary is likely to be fresher. And the summary being fresher means it's more likely to have all of the relevant information you need to get up to speed on that incident. So, and they're also consistently formatted. So they're just easy to parse and scan quickly for people coming into new incidents.
Gotcha.
The other feature is suggested follow-ups. So suggested follow-ups are a little bit like suggested summaries in that they take all of the context from a channel. They'll use your summaries, your updates, and the conversation you've had in Slack. And what it will do is it will pull out any follow-up actions that you might want to tackle after the incident. And by tackling those over time, your incident response can become more resilient. So instant channels, there's often a lot going on. People might post an idea, hey, we should investigate this after, or maybe we should improve in this area. But with all the conversation that's going on and the intense focus on response, they can be easily forgotten. So once the incident closes, we'll use AI to generate those follow-ups to pull in all of that contextual information and things that you might have said you should do, and then formally turn them into follow-ups and help them get completed.
Gotcha. So obviously, I think there's a lot to get into. You guys just spoke about a lot of these different AI features. And Charlie, not to derail the direction of this conversation, earlier you mentioned autonomy, which is something that I really want to get into later in this conversation. But anyway, naturally, when it comes to any feature set, my first question is why? So Charlie, you mentioned that customers were asking for some of these features. Was that the case with everything, or were there some combination of other factors that led us to create, you know, assistant summary suggestions, follow-ups, and related incidents? Were we hoping to experiment? Just curious what went into this decision.
It definitely was a journey. And I think, as you say, multiple factors leading into where we are right now. In terms of a starting point, obviously, we're all very aware of the trend to bring AI into products at the moment. We didn't want to jump on that too quickly. We wanted good reason to go after that. But we were continually experimenting with these technologies. So kind of early last year, we had a hackathon. And within that, a couple of the engineers went after suggested summaries as their project. They saw promise there, but we saw issues around latency and overall quality from OpenAI, who we were using for the integration. So we knew it was good, but not good enough yet to put in front of customers. And we put it on the shelf and then came back to it in Q4 of 2023. So part of it was, we know there's some value within AI. A lot of other companies are going after it. But I think the other angle was, we had specific customer asks for certain features, and it became obvious that these would be a good fit for AI. So related incidents, for example, a lot of customers were asking for the ability to link incidents from a manual perspective, but actually it became really obvious that we could implement this via AI, and this will be even more powerful. Assistant, again, we had a lot of questions from customers, and they were aimed at expanding insights, more nuanced charts. They weren't specifically asking for a chat interface to do that analysis, but then it became obvious that that was the type of solution. So I think, yeah, it was a combination of trends within the industry, also customers coming to us with pain points and us kind of spotting the opportunities. And at least a couple of these features, very kind of small quality of life improvements, but as Ed pointed out, they're making huge impact on the amount of time that responders have to spend in incidents.
Gotcha. I'm really curious about each of your perspectives on this project. So Ed, obviously you are on the data side of things,
And Charlie, obviously, you're on the product side. So how did this project play out for each of you? And sort of more specifically, what were each of your roles and how did you both contribute to these projects?
Yeah, just to kick off, it's a hard question to answer, honestly, because these projects feel so different to anything we've worked on before. They're not like building traditional software. The projects run very differently. They're also not like typical data science. So I guess that's what resonates mostly with me. There's no way to test and validate these the performance of the system is getting better. So it's this interesting thing where you have to keep tweaking, but then often go by feel and intuition about when these systems are good enough. So yeah, it was kind of a unique experience for me compared to normal projects.
Yeah, very much the same for me. Within product engineering, we've spent a lot of time to make projects run as quickly as possible and in some way feel very similar from one project to the next. However, because we were kind of going with our gut on we think the solution to this customer pain point is AI, rather than customers coming specifically and saying, I really want this solution with AI, it was a different type of project. So taking Assistant, for example, we did a 1 week really quick spike with a single alpha customer just to understand, does this technology work in the way that we think? Does the customer think that this is of true value, or is it more of something that they'd like to play around with? And from there, we then scaled up to 10 customers on a beta and then eventually launched. That isn't our typical project. And it was a lot of going to customers, talking to them, understanding how they feel about it, both from our perspective of, does this feel good? What's our gut saying? But also, how's this feel with beta customers? So yeah, I'd say it was a longer project, especially on the assistant side, and a lot more interaction with customers to make sure we're building something that's really valuable.
Yeah. I'm actually really happy that you mentioned this like idea of working really fast, because obviously it feels like AI changes every day and like everyone is in this race to create the best AI assistant feature or AI based feature that they can. So what was it like to work on a feature like AI where you have to keep pace so much to not sort of get left behind? Was that for both of you, was that your first experience like working at this like crazy pace where what you're trying to sort of reach for is always in motion? If that makes sense.
I think there was generally a pressure, as always, at Incident to deliver quickly, but the larger pressure was to validate quickly. So we didn't want these AI features to just fall into the bucket of following the AI trend. So we had a really high bar for what that value was going to be for our customers. However, that didn't mean that we could sit on this for months on end. We wanted to go to our customers quickly and early, bring them features and talk to them. So I think the assistant, again, is like a perfect example of that. We had alpha, beta, and then GA within a four-week period, talking to over 15 customers and getting a load of insight on how they build out reports. That was a lot of pressure, but the pressure was to keep that quality high as well. I think the other angle of this is that a lot of these new AI features and communities are really, really fresh. So we actually started the project on the assistant on the day that OpenAI had their dev day, which was a nice surprise because they released something which was exactly what we wanted to build the project. But that meant that we were kind of in the Wild West. There wasn't a lot of support in terms of how people had built these things before, and we were going from zero to one on prompt engineering in the team. It was a very new skill set that we were trying to master. So yeah, I think there was a lot of pressure around that. So trying to get that quality bar, but trying to upskill on those areas simultaneously. So build and learn at pace.
In prompt engineering, we've had to rely on intuition to a significant degree. But something that's really important from a data perspective is getting these features out into the wild, into production, because then it gives us kind of true test data for each of the features. So now we know when we make a change, we can see directly how that is impacting our customers and if we're improving our feature or not. So actually going fast, getting things into production is really enabling us to now validate the impact of the features and improve them even more quickly.
We'll actually get into prompt engineering in just a little bit. But before that, Ed, I think this is a question for you. Charlie mentioned us working with design partners and them playing a very, very important role in all of these projects. Mm-hmm. What was it like working with these design partners?
Yeah, so at Incident, we have incredibly close relationships with many of our customers. So lots of our new projects will work closely with design partners. But I'd say that was even more true here. And there's probably kind of two reasons driving that. One is the uncertainty around what we would build. When we started out the projects, we were very much in test and sort of validation mode. So we were going on a journey with our customers to find where we could have the most impact to begin with. What we also saw from our customer base is they were so excited to work with us on these features. So they'd spend hours tinkering, playing with kind of alpha and beta features as we were releasing them. So they kind of, were very happy to commit time to working on them with us. So they really drove what we did from the first feature we released, which was suggested summaries. We were learning and learning with them. So by the time we got to working on Assistant, we'd learned a lot. And informed by their input.
Gotcha. So Charlie, obviously, I think this one is for you. Prompt engineering. So this is a sort of relatively newish space. And I think you're in a really interesting position because you're both building these feature sets out while also learning how to do the thing. So what was that experience like for you?
Every day, getting completely learning something completely new, to be honest. It was a pretty experience. I think the interesting thing was the three kind of more scoped in features, suggested summary, suggested follow-ups, and related incidents. Mm-hmm. They work on kind of a single ask and response. So we're writing a very specific prompt for a very specific task, getting the AI to help us with that, and then showing the response within our product. And there's not really much in terms of user input in that flow. We control most of what's going on in there. Whereas with Assistant, you just open the door to any kind of question. So even when we thought, we've got the prompt in a really good place now, we then open up to a few more beta customers and they start using it in a completely different way. And it pushes us to do some more work. So with this, it's kind of a never-ending story. Like, the more customers that use it, they use it in different ways. The model actually gets better, which allows different types of analysis, again, different ways, which all leads back into smaller tweaks in prompt engineering. I think generally, though, with prompt engineering, you need really focused time. I did like a decent amount of the prompt engineering on Assistant, along with a few people in the team. And it was great that the team allowed for that type of focus time. Like, we had a day dedicated to prompt engineering. You can really get your head down and get into it. And we also partnered with a few other companies who had done similar products. So Typeform, Linear, and Gradient Labs all have built awesome AI products as well. Go and have a look at them. And they're really helpful with their approach into doing it. So Typeform, for example, have an awesome A-B testing integration, so they can test out how their prompt changes from change to change. I wish we had that. It'd be awesome. But this is early days. I think the three smaller features were kind of 1 week projects, and then Assistant was 4 weeks. So to see us go from not really having done any prompt engineering to now being really confident on understanding why something's gone wrong and actually going in and fixing it is awesome to see as a team.
I can imagine that it's really hard. So you have a system set up perfectly for all of these inputs. And the minute an input that comes in that isn't sort of, that doesn't fit into that box, it sort of breaks everything. How do you take that into consideration when doing something like prompt engineering and building an entire product set around that, where one input that you didn't account for can just derail everything?
We covered three approaches with this. Normally, as part of a normal delivery project here, we'll do an impact dashboard within our Metabase instance, looking at metrics on how that feature's landed with customers. That tends to happen kind of the last thing you do as part of launch. I think we did ours like 2 days into the project or something. We were tracking questions asked, themes within those questions, response time, tons of metrics. So like, the key thing there was data and observability. We were aware of what customers were asking because we knew that we were incredibly biased in the questions that we were testing the assistant with. The second way was adding feedback mechanisms into the product. So quite early on, we added thumbs up, thumbs down, and detailed negative feedback if a customer isn't happy with what the assistant's given them. And thirdly is relationship with customers.
So especially our alpha tester customer, some really honest, great feedback that we can rely on from him. And consistently through beta as well, all the customers were really, really keen to tell us exactly what they thought of it. And that just helped the product improve greatly.
Yeah. Just to add on design partners, we actually had some who we'd speak to on Slack almost every day, as well as doing user testing sessions. So really those close relationships, I think, gave us an understanding of where the value is for customers. So there's always things you don't expect. But I think in the most part, we understood where people would get value and could optimize the product around those areas.
So obviously this was a really big project broken up into a few different chunks. So again, assistant, summary suggestions, follow-ups, related incidents. At the highest level, what was the hardest part of this project for each of you? Again, like we spoke about earlier, Charlie, learning the ropes of prompt engineering while building the thing, I think, was a challenge in and of itself. So again, yeah, just wondering what the hardest part of this was for each of you.
I think scope for each of the projects, because in one way you could kind of be led by the AI trend, and yeah, it's very easy to be like, oh, let's go and build something cool, which provides very little value to customers. But then when you're actually focusing on, okay, we're treating this really as a normal feature, we're just powering it via AI from an integration point of view, you can then go so big in terms of implementation and scope, especially with the assistant. So we talked previously around people having used similar AI tools and they're kind of expecting that functionality. There's some awesome product ideas that we've had around where the assistant could go in the future, around building kind of your own dashboards, sharing insights that you've made during a conversation with your team. It's really tricky to get to the core of something that you want to release as part of that first version. And doing that for each of them was really hard, I think, because it isn't a normal project. You can keep tinkering on it. You get some really valuable feedback, and we could have easily done 8 weeks on the assistant instead of four. So yeah, I think definitely scope and focusing on customer value within that was tricky at every stage.
I think for me, just working with a technology that is so nascent, it's incredible. The outputs are sometimes amazing, but we just contended with a lot of variability. So on some days we'd wait 30 seconds for an API response. On other days we'd wait half a second. And that's just one example, but things like that where you never know quite what to expect makes it quite hard to build with. Whereas in traditional software, things tend to be quite predictable. So that was an interesting challenge as well.
Gotcha. So earlier, Charlie, you mentioned the idea of autonomy, and earlier I mentioned that I was glad that you had mentioned that. And I'm going to say again, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because one of the things or conversations around AI is this idea that it removes a lot of autonomy from people. You ask this AI chatbot, let's just say you ask an AI chatbot a question, it spits something out. There's very little input from the human side outside of just that input. So I'm wondering how we factored in that to this conversation throughout all of these builds. How did we build in these sort of stop gaps to make sure that these features don't remove the human element from the equation?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I really, really agree. I think a lot of AI systems now, this magic box, you throw some things in, you get some things back. And interpretability is a huge problem. And it's something we definitely wanted to focus on at Incident. I mean, here we really believe that incident management is fundamentally a human problem. I mean, you can see that in our core feature set. We help manage communication. We also offer features and things like on-call pay. So our entire product design philosophy is focused around the human. So when it comes to AI, that means having the human in the loop is extremely important. And you can see that in the way we develop each of our features. I mean, with things like Assistant, there is literally a human dialogue. But even with the other features, they still have human in the loop. So for a suggested summary, for example, we offer the responder a suggestion and then they can use it or not. But fundamentally, it's still the human who sets it. The human can also come in and edit the suggestion after the fact. They have complete control. It's not a take it or leave it offering. And the same could be said for related incidents and suggested follow-ups. So fundamentally, all of the features we're releasing now have that human in the loop. I think it's an interesting challenge for the long run as well, where right now you see in production systems, very rarely you actually see a kind of autonomous agent that will go away and kind of do lots of actions without telling you. I think over time, it'll be interesting over the next few years as these systems become more powerful, how we can keep that human in the loop. I remember Intercom had a podcast last year with their CPO, Paul Adams, and he sort of used the analogy of role-based access control for an AI. So what you can do right now is have an AI is like a person and they have very limited permissions. They can't do much inside your product. But you could have a human over time toggling what they are and aren't able to do. In that podcast, they use the example of a social media marketer where the AI assumes that role and they could try lots of different posts, measure their performance, and the best ones generate more posts and iterate in that way. But you could insert the human in a loop in lots of different places. Like they have to look at the analytics to understand which post does best, or they need to look at the posts before they get sent to make sure they're in line with the brand or things like this. So you could imagine toggling on and off different levels of kind of AI capability or AI autonomy over time. So that's something we might consider in the long run. But for now, fundamentally, all these features have a human in the loop and it's a closed loop. And yeah, just to reiterate, that really is fundamental for our design philosophy for AI and otherwise.
So what do you think? Like, what are your reflections on this project? Obviously, it's very clear that you both learned quite a bit throughout these projects.
Yeah, for me, like, I feel very fortunate to have worked on this project. It was assigned to me. I didn't know what it was on the first day. And we sat down and we started scoping out what we thought we wanted to build. So it's been like an awesome journey to end Q4 and the year. I think my big takeaway is really sitting down and doing some decent retros on how to run these types of projects. There's lots of things that happen within it that could have easily derailed it and kind of forced us to go a lot longer. This isn't going to be our only set of AI features. Currently, it's just sat within the post-incident team, but we're going to be moving it on to other teams next. So doing that learning early of how do we run AI projects, how do we build AI features was really key. And now we can pass that on to the next team that does it. We took some learnings from the first couple of projects and applied it to the third and fourth. So yeah, I think the act of learning prompt engineering is kind of sit down and do the work, but the complexities of actually building out these projects was probably the unexpected learning for me.
Yeah, for me, I'm kind of, this might come across in the wrong way, but I'm just amazed that it works at all. You hear so much hype and noise around AI, but when it comes down to it, already these features are having an enormous impact on our product. I mentioned this in the very beginning with suggested summaries, but already more than half of incidents are now helped being resolved by AI. So it's already having a huge impact, and that's definitely surprising.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we spoke about this. I think it was you that mentioned this, Ed. There's just like a lot of, I guess, volatility when it comes to AI. So I like echo that sentiment. Like, you can do all the work, but given just the nature of it, it just may not end up being something viable. So plus one on the surprise that it works. And I'm based on I've seen all of the quotes from customers, you know, design partners, so on and so forth, about like how transformative these features have been in the short time that they've been using them. And I think that's just obviously best case scenario for us. And I'm like really happy to see that now that we've sort of laid the groundwork for AI in the product, that we can continue to build on that success and really show people that there is a way to balance AI in a way that it's legitimately helpful for you, but doesn't remove your autonomy from the conversation. So yeah, kudos to both of you. And I think I speak for everyone when I say thank you for weathering this storm, especially you, Charlie, with the prompt engineering. I know it was a challenge, like you said, but I think, hey, it's a good thing you know how to do it now.
Exactly.